available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together we make the Podcast of Champions. Lots of championships to talk about. The Pac-12, Olympic sports. We did all that stuff last week. But we're going to talk about the NFL draft. We're going to talk some football, maybe something a little more your speed. We didn't get a ton of feedback on the Olympic stuff, but, you know, hey, we had to digress a little bit because it is a conference of champions. A bunch of Pac-12 championships have been handed out, but we're going to focus on football, like we said. If you have any questions or comments for us, we need topic ideas. You guys have been doing a great job of sending them in during the offseason. Pac-12podcast@gmail.com. If you'd like to call or text us, you can use that format. People call people still. Do you know that, Dave? Like they call people on the phone and talk. That happens sometimes. You can do that. 424-532-0678. Excuse me, 0678. Leave us a voicemail. If you'd like to tweet us, we do that quite a bit at Pac-12Podcast. Of course, our website is Pac-12Podcast.com. And then go to iTunes, go to Google Play, wherever you get your podcast, however you're listening to this, go in there. Leave us a 5-star rating. That would be awesome. Some sort of positive review. Tell your friends about it. You know, anyone that likes Pac-12 sports, Pac-12 football, tell them about our little show. We show up every day. We show up every week. We're bringing you our best. We put so much work into this. Right, David? Like, so much work.
We bring you about, like, 40%. Like, 40%. I'm putting in, I would say, like, you're probably putting in, like, a good 55%. I probably put in about a, you know, about a 30%. I think we're averaging out about 40, like 42 and a half. When was the last time you picked up a phone call from a number you didn't know?
I literally just called someone today and the guy answered the phone. Are you trying to sell me insurance? Someone like left me a voicemail that like I'd met you at practice. I lost your number. He called like my podcast line actually. So I like call him out of the blue and he doesn't have my number obviously. And he's like, yeah, I normally don't do that. I'm like, yeah, I don't usually either. Like Google, like my Android has like a screen call thing. So I'll do that. Do you do anything like that? Or what do you do?
I think the last time I picked up a phone call from a number I didn't know, it was like 1996.
Nice. Yeah. What was the last time you picked up a phone call at all? Like if I call you, you don't really answer. Like your wife, maybe?
No. I've got like 3 people in the world I'll pick up. otherwise, it's going to voicemail. And most of the time, people don't leave voicemails anymore. Basically, I'll call you back if you call me, and then there's a follow-up text that's like, hey, can you give me a call when you get a chance? Like that says, okay, I actually need to communicate with this person verbally. Otherwise, nah. I mean, you're probably getting a text message, or maybe next time I'll see you, I'll talk to you.
I feel like, you know, sometimes there's different, the world changes sometimes, right? Like there's before, you know, 9/11, the world was one way. After 9/11, it was another way. Like before the internet, like everything was one way. And then afterwards, it was the other. I feel like we're on this, in this like kind of purgatory zone with voicemail, because there's a bunch of people that still use it and there's a bunch of people that don't. And I don't, it hasn't switched. It hasn't, like, everyone hasn't given it up. And everyone hasn't, you know, re-embraced it. So, my wife, Gerard, like, I have people in my life that they don't ever set up their voicemail. It's just full all the time, but it's still there. Like, we haven't dropped it as a society, like, technology-wise. And then I have other people that leave voicemails and do it all the time. Or they call you and they don't leave a voicemail and they don't follow up with a text. I'm not really sure what to do. I feel like we're in this weird zone, Dave, that we got to go one way or the other.
I hear you. Can I tell you, I have 15 unheard voicemails on my phone right now, and the oldest one is from April of last year.
Wow. That would be like a little scratch in your brain that you couldn't go away. Like I couldn't do that. I couldn't have like all, I don't like any unread emails, texts, all that stuff. I actually just went through like 300 like Facebook requests. Like people would like friend request me that are like, I don't know, but they're like USC people. And I was like, I just kind of would ignore them. And I'm like, screw it. I can't have this like sitting over my head. So I had to go through and like, if I kind of knew them or I've just heard of them, or if we have a lot of mutual friends, I would like accept them. But I can't do that. That's like, that would bother me too much to have unread voicemails and stuff.
Yeah, I can. I have the same impulse where I can't handle it, but like my desire to do that is like, I'm just like, there's gonna be pain either way, and I'd rather just the pain of like that hanging over my head forever. But Ryan,
yes,
we've got to talk some actual stuff and not just what prompted some weird thought in my brain when you were talking about voicemail lines. No, Ryan, we need to talk about the NFL draft, which just happened. Now tell me, I didn't watch. The Pac-12 did well, yes? Had a lot of draft picks, tons of first rounders.
No, not necessarily. But I don't think overall not terrible, but it wasn't great. I think there was numbers wise overall, I think was pretty good. But not the high end stuff that you would like. So the first time, so these are some stats I put together from our buddy John Wilner and then a couple other sources. But the first time since 2007, no Pac-12 prospects were picked in the top 10. So no one in the top 10. That's the first time that's happened in over 10 years. So 12 years. I mean, that's kind of crazy. And only.
So where did Jake Browning go then?
So there was an after round of after seven. No, he wasn't drafted. There was a lot of talk about him being improved.
Wait, so he's coming? So he's coming back?
No, he's not coming back. I forget where he signed. I didn't look. Did you look it up? Where he signed?
He signed with the Vikings.
Okay.
He will be playing for another purple team next year.
Another purple team. All right. So, but no, he did not get drafted. And so the Pac-12 had three players in the first round. They were later in the first round. So that's the first time that's happened. Since 2014, according to Wilner, he said, in contrast to recent years, none of the selections, the first round selections, were from USC, UCLA, Stanford, or Oregon. So those four programs, Dave, the last 14 first rounders, those four programs produced 10 of them. So none of them this time around, none of those teams had a first round pick. So that's kind of strange. And then also no Pac-12 quarterbacks were picked in the first round. They had four selected over the last 4 years, none in the first round this year. So some of the at the very top, Dave, not the best numbers, I'd say.
Yeah, and I think it explains well enough why maybe last year was not a great year for the Pac-12, or last couple of years, actually, not a great couple of years for the Pac-12. The top end talent maybe wasn't there. And this kind of speaks to that. If you don't have a bunch of first round quarterbacks or even a couple or even one, that's gonna, not look so great.
Yeah.
And if the teams that generally end up with the most talent, your USC, your UCLA, your Stanford, your Oregon, obviously Washington would be in that group as well. And we'll talk about them some more, but if the four of those five teams that are your typical talent standard bearers or whatever, aren't producing talent at that level, it's going to show in the results for the league too. If the top end schools are not holding up their end of the bargain from a, talent acquisition and development standpoint. So it's of a piece with everything, but it also makes me maybe a little bit more optimistic going forward for the Pac-12 because these cycles happen, lulls of talent happen. And if you buy that the NFL draft is a true reflection of, the talent in a league, whether guys get drafted high, which I buy to an extent, then yeah, this explains it well enough why the Pac-12 has had some issues the last couple of years.
And then, I don't think it's overall a bad thing. And my buddy, Braden Gall, I think I used to work with him at Rivals like way back in the day. He's a radio guy now, but he tweeted this out. So he took the data from the last six drafts, put them together. So it's, more of a historic thing, recent history. So the SEC is at the top, obviously. They've had 324 players drafted over the last six drafts. That's 23.1 picks per school over that time period, which is kind of crazy. The Pac-12, total over the 6 years, each school had an average of 23.1 picks. For the Pac-12, 204 picks over that period, so, you know, 120 less than the SEC, but it's still a respectable 17 picks per school. So over that 6 years, you know, each school had 17 players drafted. The ACC had a few more, 231 overall picks, but with more, you know, they have actually less per school, 16 and a half. And then the Big Ten, a little bit lower, 220 overall picks in 6 years, 15.7 picks per school. And then the Big 12 comes out, the rounds it out with 128 picks. So that's 12.8 per school over the last 6 years. So, you know, over the last 6 years, Dave, that's not bad. The Pac-12 basically is second to the SEC.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I think that stands to reason. I don't think historically there is all that much separation between the next three conferences after the SEC. It's just been kind of the last couple years that it's really been. But, I mean, the Pac-12 was, you know, I think 2013, 2014, maybe even 2015 was a top two or three league. So this doesn't shock me too much. Obviously, they need to have the talent on the upswing again here soon, and I think it probably will because that's the way these cycles go. And there's always going to be a large set of West Coast kids who are just going to stay on the West Coast and go to Pac-12 schools. So, this makes sense to me.
Yeah, so not too bad. And then overall, just for this year, for 2019, the SEC set a record. 64 draft picks from the SEC. So that's kind of crazy. And the average round, so like the average pick of the, you know, whichever it was, 3.85, which is pretty good. The Big Ten, they had 40 overall selections with their average round a little bit higher, 3.95. The Pac-12 comes in number 33 overall picks, but the average round of the picks taken is a lot higher than the other programs, 4.34. The ACC had 28 overall picks, and they had the best average of 3.53. So fewer picks, but they actually, you know, more higher picks, I guess you could say. And then the Big 12 came in with 26 picks with an average round of 4.0. The AAC had 11 picks, the Mountain West had 10, and the MAC had 9. So, you know, the Pac-12's up there kind of middle of the pack, but the numbers show that a lot – there was more late picks for the Pac-12 than earlier picks.
Yeah, and I it just speaks to the same narrative where it's under-talented. You know, UCLA was famous for this back in the day. They'd have, like, you know, several draft picks, but it was always, like, sixth and seventh rounders. So yeah. It's like, yeah, these guys didn't make a roster ever. Like, they got in and got cut in training camp. But, yeah, they were drafted. And it's, you know, when you're after the fourth round, it gets into dicey territory, and that's about where the Pac-12 averaged. That SEC stat is nuts. 64 guys with an average round of 3.85, just like so everyone's looking at the same thing here. That's better than everyone but the ACC, and the ACC had 36 fewer draft picks.
Nuts.
So that's incredible. That's top-end talent and also, obviously, quantity. So, crazy.
Yeah, SEC's good at the footballs. But, you know, we'll see, going forward, where the Pac-12 goes. As far as the number of players drafted per team, Washington, bow down to the Huskies, 8 overall picks. So that was the best in the conference. Utah and Stanford each had 5, so they're second. Oregon and USC each had 4. ASU and Washington State each had 2. Then Colorado, UCLA, and Arizona each had 1. And UCLA's was the very last pick in the draft. And Oregon State and Cal had none.
Yeah, and I always, just by nature of the work I do, I look at things a little bit through the UCLA context. But I think, I mean, you can pin a lot of this on, or this breakdown, as it were, with the Pac-12's top-end talent on what UCLA has been doing in terms of talent development over the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. If you look back at the recruiting classes that UCLA had that made up this, what would have been this draft cycle, which would be basically 2014, 2015, 2016, that was the 18th ranked class in the country, the 12th ranked class in the country, and the 13th ranked class in the country. You're producing one draft. I mean, obviously some guys are in there. You know, Josh Rosen was in there last year, but when you're, you know, 4 years after that, 5 years after that, and you're producing one draft pick, that's abysmal. And the that is horrendous.
That, you know, that is
ferocious.
And but there you go. And that draft pick wasn't even from the recruiting class. He was a transfer.
No. No. Yeah, no. USC and UCLA should get credit for that one, right?
He was a walk-on.
Caleb Wilson walked on at USC and then decided he liked LA so much. And so when his dad got – when that staff changed and I think his dad was let go, he decided to transfer over to UCLA. But he was a walk-on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, and he was Mr. Irrelevant too. I mean, it was – they got one pick in the draft and it was the last guy picked.
So that probably didn't help the average, I guess. So that's
– No. Yeah, it's just – Yeah, I mean, and the you know, it makes sense. I mean, Washington and Utah have probably been doing, you know, among the best jobs in terms of talent development. Washington's breakdown of draftees to, like, initial star ranking has to be so good. Because they turn a lot of guys who I remember watching in high school where I was like, oh, yeah, he's fine. And they turn him into a draft pick. And I'm just like, okay, well, that's talent development. And it seems like every year we're staring at some big number of Washington NFL draft picks. And, you know, some of that is just, you know, there is that kind of circular bias where winning teams tend to, you know, get more draft picks because, I don't know, coaches watch them more and whatever. There's a bunch of other stuff that goes into it. But I think largely it's talent development. You know, Washington does a great job developing talent. Utah and Stanford both do as well. And then, you know, some of the more talent-rich recruiting powers just haven't necessarily developed talent at that same level. Oregon, you know, is a little bit on the upswing, but, you know, this is not quite peak Oregon. USC at 4 is, you know, that's pretty bad for USC.
Yeah.
And UCLA at 1, that's obviously very, very not good for UCLA.
No. The first Pac-12 guy off the board was Andre Dillard. I think we talked about him, the offensive lineman from Washington State. Wasn't he like – he was like a 2- or 3-star guy, right, that just kind of developed?
Yeah, I think he was. Let me pull up his profile on 247. He was a 3-star composite guy.
Okay.
But a pretty low 3-star composite guy.
Okay. And then for Washington, the first round, Caleb McGarry, the tackle, he went to the Falcons. Do you remember? I don't remember him as a recruit.
I remember him. He was a tight end, I think, initially as a recruit, or like very, very initially in the process, or at least he was built like a tight end.
He's from Washington too, though, so we wouldn't have seen him like in person a lot.
Yeah, I mean, he was a 4-star kid, and I think he was one of those that was like kind of I think Brandon projected him maybe as potentially an offensive tackle down the road or something to that effect. Oh. But he was, I remember him being like a tight endy defensive end type. I could be wrong, but that's my recollection of him as a prospect.
Yeah.
But he was, I mean, he was a prospect. Like he was a 4-star kid.
Yeah, he was. Okay. Byron Murphy, I remember him. He was a big, he was like a 4-star kid from Arizona, I believe.
Yep. Yep.
Do you remember where Taylor Rapp? I don't. Was he a big? He was
so Byron Murphy was a 4-star. Taylor Rapp was a 3-star.
Okay.
He was also a Washington kid.
Yeah.
He was a 4-star 247 Sports. I don't think these carried over from Scout though. So I think that was 247 Sports before Scout's merger.
Okay.
But he was a 3-star composite.
Okay. And then the other high pick they had for a second round was Drew Sample. So he was from like Bellevue, Washington, I believe. But again, I don't remember how, but you know.
Another 3-star kid.
Okay. So 3- and 4-star dudes. But you know, Washington puts one guy in the first round and then 3 people in the second round. That's pretty significant, you know, and then 4 more guys in the later round. So, you know, you got like a Ben Burkervin, you know, a lot of production. He goes to the Seahawks. So, Miles Gaskin, he's a seventh rounder. Wow, he went to Miami. I think he's a guy that could make a roster. So, yeah, it's some interesting, you know, it's an interesting development for Washington. And as the Huskies and Chris Peterson bring more and more of that higher-ranked talent, you know, what can they do with them? You know, they've developed the 3-star guys, but, you know, now you get 4-star guys coming in or higher-ranked guys. And it's looking good for Washington.
Yeah, and I think scary for the rest of the Pac-12. Once Washington starts recruiting consistently as a top 15, you know, type school, with that talent development, I mean, that's going to be hard to catch him. You know, Chris Peterson is a great coach, and the way they develop, I mean, it's the whole package, but the way they develop and scheme, that's not pretty for anybody in the North, but I think in the league in general, marrying true top end talent with that staff that's a scary thought.
Yeah. The other one, Bryce Love. So he fell where to the fourth round, I believe it was. Did he go to the Redskins? Yeah. I think he went to the Redskins in the fourth round, from like a Heisman runner up guy to fourth round pick. But you know, he had the injuries and stuff, but that's one of those interesting ones. Like, he might just come in and just tear it up for the Redskins.
I honestly was a little bit surprised he was drafted that high.
Really?
After all of the, well, he had a rough last year. Was not anywhere near as explosive as he had been, and then he's got injury issues now. And you know, with the NFL, it's such a business decision thing. I would have expected him to fall a little bit more, because you can still get a lot of value in the fourth round. And I don't, a banged up running back who's already banged up after his college career, I don't know if that's a ton of value in the fourth round. I mean, take all the rest of it out of it. Take the Heisman and everything like it. I mean, he was not the same player last year, and that was still in college ball.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah. Any other takeaways you had from the?
No, pretty much. I mean, what you've said. I think the really big thing that you've said that I think people should take something from was that there were no Pac-12 quarterbacks drafted in the first round. After four were selected in, you know, the previous four drafts, it really was that, you know, there just was a kind of a lack of super top end talent at that most critical position. And we had talked about that after the previous year when, you know, when Josh Rosen and Sam Darnold were both left early, among others. And there was always going to be a gap then. And I think this kind of shows it, and nobody else really stepped up. I mean, obviously besides our man, Jake Browning, Gardner Minshew ended up getting drafted. So that was, I think he got drafted, right? It was towards the end.
Yeah. I believe, I forget where he went.
I think he ended up in Tampa Bay.
Okay.
I think.
But yeah, like no Jake Browning. So who came out as quarterbacks? Manny Wilkins, I think got drafted, right?
Let me see.
Packers.
No,
they signed
undrafted,
him.
Undrafted free agent.
Okay, so the Packers signed him. All right.
Yeah.
But yeah, so to have, like, you know, Minshew like tore it up, and you know he gets drafted sort of later.
Yeah, I mean you're talking about, I mean, the we would probably say were the three best quarterbacks in the Pac-12 last year.
Yeah.
In some order. Are we forgetting anybody? I guess KJ Costello could be in that conversation. Justin Herbert, obviously, but neither of them.
Yeah.
But like, these were three of the top six. Three of the top 10, if we're including Jake Browning.
Yeah.
And you know, Browning's an undrafted free agent. Manny Wilkins is an undrafted free agent. Gardner Minshew's a late round pick. So
yeah,
that's just kind of the story.
So yeah, Minshew was a fifth round pick. He went to Jacksonville. So he'll be behind Nick Foles, who they just signed there. So, but that might not be a bad spot for him. And, you know, maybe start out as a backup. Who knows how long Foles will be around. And, you know, he tore it up last year, record-setting, you know, performance. So we'll see what Minshew's able to do. Anything else? That's probably it. The only other note I put down. Yeah, thanks for putting all the notes in there this week, Dave. I appreciate you
you're welcome.
Contributing.
You're welcome.
We should like give people access to this. Like, yeah, we let other people put notes in.
That would probably add to the one who's currently making notes in here.
Right. That's true. So definitely read our friend John Wilner, who does an amazing job. But there's another series of, hotline newsletter posts and articles essentially going through a lot of the details of the conference finances. Quick recap is, revenue's going down, expenses are going up, and the gap between the Pac-12 and the other conferences is getting wider. Is that a fair?
That seems good.
Is that a fair recap? Fine.
Yeah, that's. I don't see a problem.
Did you go through? I mean, I went through some of the stuff. It's like, it's not encouraging. I think the UVerse stuff is affecting it, right? And
mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't know. It just doesn't seem like anything's going to change until like 5 years from now.
Yeah, and it doesn't. Yeah, it does not seem like there's a ton of hope of that changing. So, they're. I honestly think they're in kind of, you know, the next couple of years, just kind of hope the gap doesn't widen. Yeah, even more than it's already looking like it's widening. Because it seems like, I don't know the details of the other schools, but it seems like they're almost overshooting their projections of revenue while the Pac-12 is just floundering here. So,
yeah,
it's great.
We're not even hitting like the lower, like what they promised, like the lower edge of it. Like we're not hitting that.
And you got Dabo Swinney out there making $9.3 million a year now. I've been kind of throwing cold water on the arms race aspect of the revenue stuff because I do think there are diminishing returns at some point. But, I mean, there's not a Pac-12 school in the conversation with $9.3 million.
No.
There's not one. I don't think any of them are paying over. I think Peterson might be the most of the publicly released ones, and I think he's at like 4.3, something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, Clay Helton's obviously not getting paid more than that. I don't know what David Shaw's getting paid, but. Competing with 9 million with the state of the revenue in the Pac-12, I don't know even know if that would be fiscally responsible for any AD. I mean, probably if you can get an elite guy, but you're then starting to bump up against, well, is this actually going to turn the, you know, profit we need? And it probably will. The calculation is always there that it will. But some of the schools just like literally might not have the money to keep up at some point. You know, for some schools, it's just a question of how are they going to allocate the resources that they have, you know, like your USC's, your Stanford's, your UCLA's to an extent, Washington, so on and so forth. But some schools, they're not coming up with $9 million no matter how you do the math.
No.
And that's where it's really, really dicey.
What? Okay, just picture like the college football landscape financially where we are today, but let's move the clock back 15 years and USC has like Pete Carroll and like national championships and Heisman trophies. At this day, like they wouldn't pay them $9 million. Like an Auburn or an LSU or an Alabama or Clemson or someone could come in and take him, because I don't think USC would be able to afford to keep him in this current landscape the way the Pac-12
not USC's current landscape where they have to like, you know, pay out.
Oh yeah, well,
dollars in lawsuits over the next like
with all the lawsuits, but even if everything was going well,
but I would say, and this is my point from last week, still retention comes at a discount, and a West Coast guy probably still comes at a discount. Like a Pete Carroll, I don't know if he's going to Auburn for nine if USC steps up and gives him 6.5. Like I don't know. But the thing is, like stepping up to 6.5, USC can do that. I don't know if they'd be willing to step up to 9, but they might. I mean, some crazy booster steps up and decides he's going to throw down $3 million a year plus whatever USC can come up with for the other 6. I mean, that might happen.
Yeah.
But once you're getting to that where you're having to, like, scrounge money from your boosters and doing that, it's just you're getting into irresponsible territory that some schools also might not find palatable. So it's a weird thing, because even the schools that can maybe afford to pay that and can make the calculation, the Pac-12 is also just kind of a different league made up of different institutions who there are going to be a lot of stakeholders who balk at ever paying any athletics coach that much money.
Yeah.
So it's a really interesting time. And it's, you know, it's been, there's a spotlight on it because of all these Pac-12 revenue issues, but this was probably going to crop up at some point anyway with the way these salaries are escalating. But I know UCLA has gotten some pushback. I know University of California, the whole system has gotten some pushback for some of these ballooning salaries for coaches. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, for sure. You want me to jump into questions? I got one from John here.
Let's do it.
Off-season question, David, because it's the off-season. Dear Ryan and Dave, I must say my favorite time of year to listen to your podcast is the off-season, especially when you go to the extended two-hour format, which we did plus last week. I don't think we're going to do that this week.
Because I couldn't stop myself from yelling at Bernie. I just had to keep yelling at Bernie for like Yeah.
And I think you've inspired some other people to yell at Bernie in our other questions. We'll get to those. But he said, before I get to my question, I want to say congratulations to the Stanford University men's gymnastic team for winning the NCAA title this year. I saw the team in the Chicago Midway Airport on Easter Sunday on their way home with their champions hats on, carrying their trophy, another Olympic sports title for the Pac-12, made even sweeter with the march through the airport in Big Ten country. And I must admit, as a former gymnast and current Pac-12 fan, I got a little tear in my eye as I swelled with Pac-12 pride. Wow, that's cool, John. I think he's serious. Then they all got in line and bought some salads. So perfectly Pac-12. So he said, so they bought a bunch of salads. They win the championship and let's eat some salad. I think I'd rather have a burger, but you know, whatever. I don't know the life of a gymnast. Question. Following up on your Olympic sports survey from last week, from the following list, which events are you more likely to attend before any of the others? So these are the ones we most would want to attend. Okay, first, this came up a lot last week, a regatta, the NCAA Bowling Championships, the NCAA Softball World Series, any NCAA fencing match. Thanks for all you do, John in Brea.
So I've watched people bowl. It's boring. I've never watched people fence, but I have a feeling that's extremely boring. So it's between a regatta and the Softball World Series for me. And having never watched people row, but having sat on a rowing machine before and wanting to die, I got to go Softball World Series here.
Yeah, I would agree with you. That's the one I would want to watch the most anyway. But like the regatta, it can be kind of interesting. And like,
it depends on the atmosphere, right? If it's like that Washington one and everyone's talking about the Windermere Cup, maybe. Like it sounds like it's really cool and there's a fun atmosphere around it. But at the end of the day, you're still just watching like people row in a straight line, right?
True.
Like, you're still watching people perform the exact same motion, I don't know, a couple thousand times or whatever they do. I don't need to see that. But softball, you know, it's a sport that I get. I understand it. I can watch that. And, you know, anything that's got kind of that tournament atmosphere, I love that. I love I'll eat that up. When it's like multiple games in a day and it's, you know, for, you know, who's going to advance. I love that stuff. Like the regionals and super regionals in baseball, those are fun too.
Yeah.
Give me the Softball World Series. That sounds great.
The regatta thing, like if there was drama where like one boat's catching up to another boat, I just don't know how much you could see. Like you might, like it might happen over time because it's got, you know, you'd have to be like watching the whole, like if watching on television might be better because you could see everything, where if they just pass the bridge you're on or whatever, you know, is something exciting going to be happening then? Bowling is like whatever. I mean, I like going bowling sometimes, but I don't know how much I would watch. And fencing, have you ever done that?
No, I've never fenced.
Oh, what? We had like for some reason in high school, like we had like a fencing for gym. You know, like there was some thing where they had some fencing stuff. And
did you go to high school in Britain?
No,
where did you go?
This was a public high school. Like it's, you know. Like, I don't know why. Like, it was some weird thing that they had. They must have had, like, equipment left over or something, so they would do that once a year or something. So I've tried it, like, but yeah, it's like you basically just have to touch the sword to...
Was that after dressage class? Like, what were you...
Really, this is little Milford High School in Massachusetts. No, like, I have no idea why. Like, there must have been leftover equipment, and that's why we got it. So, but we got to try it. It was all right. Like we had like a tournament and stuff. I don't remember how I did, but you have to like touch the tip of your foil. It's a foil, they call it, I believe, to like the chest of the other person. And then like you get points that way. So I've watched a little bit of it, but I don't really know. It's like people score. You can't really tell. I don't know. There's probably some experts out there. They'll tell us we're full of shit or whatever. But I tried it. Yeah, it's a foil, I believe. And you put like
or
a mask
epee?
On.
An epee, I believe.
An
it's
epee?
An epee?
Maybe. I don't know. But
I don't know.
That was a long time ago, but I've actually put on some fencing gear and tried to do it before, just randomly.
Okay, all right. But, well, that's good context for me judging you on the rest of your life.
Well, I mean, we did that right after because polo practice would only go so long, you know. Like we had the horses, we had to like calm them down and put them in the stables and stuff. So I didn't do polo. Oh. I've never done polo. I've barely been on a horse. Sorry.
All right, this is from Ryan in Chicago. Podcast complainers.
Oh.
The people who complain about you answering Disney princess questions can kick rocks. I love that you guys answer all of our questions. You both crack me up. Mario Cristobal looks like a honey glazed ham. He does.
What does a honey glazed?
Yeah, it looks like Mario Cristobal.
Nice.
Thanks. That's great, Ryan. Right. I'll read the next one, too, since that was short.
Okay. I think this one goes on to, like, two emails, by the way.
This is a... He accidentally sent this one wrong, so he sent another one.
Okay.
All right. Pac-12. This one's from Pac-Man88. Sorry, guys. I accidentally sent that before it was done. Hello, guys. This one is for Dave and is dedicated to Barney, the podcast critic. I think he's talking to Bernie. Oh, God.
I think, but the other email has more stuff in it. Like,
no, he accidentally forwarded an email from that he sent us before.
Okay.
This one is, please list each school and what fetish they would be. I'm going to read them just for fun.
Okay.
For example, Washington State would be that weird guy that likes feet. Stanford could be dendrophilia, arousal to trees. Dendrophilia. Cool.
That's a real thing.
Oregon State could be. Oregon State could be coprophilia, the arousal to feces, as you would need to be to watch that team. ASU could be exhibitionism, arousal to displaying one's sexual organs in public or something related to STDs. UCLA could be one of three nismolagnia, arousal to tickling. It explains their ability to tackle or an attraction to... or it could be omurashi. Those who identify as omo become aroused when they have a full bladder and wet themselves or observe their partner wetting themselves. Okay.
He knows a lot about this crap, man.
Wow. USC could be catoptronophilia, intense sexual satisfaction, oh God, derived from mirrors, often satisfied by having sex, stripping, or masturbating in front of mirrors. Because we all know the only thing that gets off USC is USC itself. Utah would be an unhealthy attraction to pregnant women. Arizona would be spankophilia, is a paraphilia characterized by arousal from spanking or being spanked. This is really hard to read, Pac-Man 88.
Well, there's a lot of, like, you know, Latin stuff in here. So, like, what is that? Paraphilia is a...
I don't know. But, like, also, like, the words are, like, his space bar was broken or something.
Oh,
but
yeah.
There's some stuff going on here. Anyway... Oregon would be an attraction to furries. Washington would be like dog play. Cal would be an attraction to unshaven armpits. And Colorado would be something to do with weed. Thank you, Pac-Man 88. We will not be doing that ourselves.
No. And did you see his other, like the other email was the BOFA? Did you see?
Yeah, but that was also just taken from his previous email.
Oh, that was from his previous email. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Like... But I had to look both. I'm like, what is BOFA? And then you look it up in like the urban well, first of all, it's Bank of America, but we must have read that one before.
It's BOFA.
BOFA. What's BOFA? BOFA these.
BOFA these nuts in your mouth.
That's like, oh boy. All right, this is from Bernie, not Barney, as Pac. What was his name?
Pac-Man 88.
Pac-Man 88 called him Barney. It's Bernie. He wrote in. For Ryan, Stanford's coach David Shaw has been very vocal in his praise for Chip Kelly, going so far as to say, I think most coaches will say the best coaches on the planet are great thieves, Shaw said. We've stolen ideas from everybody. You know, I've stolen more from Chip Kelly than anybody else because I think Chip is brilliant. He said this after visiting Kelly's practices and long phone conversations with him. My question, Ryan, is could you ever see Clay Helton doing the same, visiting a much-respected coach to get ideas to improve his program? Interesting. I think he's gone around. He's had coaches come in. Like, they had some kind of clinic, and, like, Sean McVay spoke. I think he's gone to other places, but we haven't really heard him, like, all-out praise somebody like David Shaw did for Chip Kelly. I think... My guess is he gets a lot of his stuff from his dad, Kim Helton. You know, what he did this last spring, bringing in an outside coach to just kind of run the offense is definitely a shift for him. But I feel like he's a guy that, you know, has his kind of beliefs and that's what he pretty much goes with as far as his coaching. But if you bring in someone from the outside, he could, you know, use them and let them do what their thing is. But That would just kind of be my take, Bernie. For Dave, he said, you seem much more optimistic about UCLA's chances for this upcoming season after observing the spring football game, saying the spring game showed much improvement over last year's. Is my observation valid? Thanks, guys. Bernie.
So I think I was I had a better experience watching the spring game this year than I did last year. They looked better in the spring game than they did in the spring game last year, but that's a far cry from how they're going to look on day one of the season. I mean, if they looked at all like they did last spring, this like in this spring game, I would be like, cancel the season, because there's no reason to look like that in year two of a head coach. They look like a team that, you know, probably won't lose nine games this year. But I don't know. I've got some questions. I think the quarterback situation is at best where it was at the end of last year. And I think it's not going to start out that good. But I think Dorian Thompson-Robinson can progress to maybe the point, or and maybe even beyond the point where they were at the end of last year. But I don't think they're going to be quite that good at the beginning of the year. I think the offensive line has a real question to answer at left tackle. Hopefully freshman Sean Ryan can come in and immediately take that spot. I'm not super worried overall about the offense, but I don't think it's going to start off quite as gangbusters as it finished last year. It won't be as bad as it was at the beginning of last year or this year, but I don't know if it'll be at the level it was towards the end of last season. My main issues are defensively. If they don't really adjust their scheme and they try to run the same sort of thing they did last year again this year, they have the same issues. They don't have a pass rush. There's no outside rush. There's no interior defensive line rush. There's, I would say, one good blitzer on the entire roster, Lokene Toaloa. So that's dicey because they tried to be somewhat aggressive. They're not pure bend but don't break. And I would actually, as much as I, you know, kind of hate to watch bend but don't break, Washington, for one, has proven that it can work at an exceedingly high level. And I wish UCLA would take a little bit from that playbook. And just haven't seen that yet. Maybe they do it and that'll work out great. But without a pass rush, I have real concerns about the defense getting a whole lot better from last year. I think there's going to be better health, so maybe that'll help somewhat. But if you're asking me if I suddenly think UCLA is going to go like 8-4 or 9-3, no. But I think it looks like a team that can maybe go bowling this year. So if that's optimism, Bernie, you've got it.
Nice. All right, real quick, Bernie. Clay Helton did try to learn something from Urban Meyer, but that was after getting spanked in the Cotton Bowl by Ohio State. When he saw, like, basically Ohio State had, like, two full lines, like, almost like hockey lines on the defensive line. They would just come out, put four guys out there, rush the quarterback, change them out for four new guys, rush the quarterback, and they were all studs and a bunch of them in the NFL now. You know, Nick Bosa was the number two overall pick. I think they said, hey, we want to try to do that. We want to rotate more on defense. He talked about it, but they didn't really because he wasn't running the defense. Clancy Pendergast was. So, So I think that's something he saw. It's like, hey, we should probably do that. But I wouldn't say that's like he's gone out and tried to learn that from somebody. It was just really he saw it up close and was like, yeah, we probably should be doing that at this point.
Yeah. All right. This is from Boone in the Bay Area to the Walter Cronkites of the Pac-12. That's. Wow, lofty. All right. Yeah. Hey, Ryan and Dave. Thanks for entertaining the stock market game last week. Dave, I like the change you made to the rules. Buy, sell, hold. Apologies for my lack of market lingo, but hey, now can we start calling Dave a capitalist? You should. I'm the expert. I am the expert on all things stock market. All right. Couple questions. As journalists for your respective schools, what is the funniest, most interesting story you have encountered during your tenure?
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
how are you going to pick?
I have no freaking clue. Like, I mean, the Sark, like, drunk, you know, at the USC booster function, only, you know, to be to up downs and suspended and fired later. Like, that's probably number one. Like, to have
the cascading Josh Shaw story around the same time was also really interesting.
It's really up there, you know? And that's when something weird happens and I'm like, yeah, that's not even top five. Like, how could that not be top five? And you start rattling off things like, oh, yeah, those are all pretty good. The Josh Shaw one, because USC like embraced it themselves and put it out there. Like they tried to become the media. Like,
that's exactly. That's what kind of got me about that one, is that it like was so publicly one story and then was so publicly a different story so quickly.
Yeah. And it just, it's not one of those things where it comes out publicly one way and then it just sort of like, oh, that's not really how it happened. It just goes away. No, it became like it, you know, it's like this lie you got caught in, and it just made it worse and worse. And you, and I feel bad for the kid, because he's only been like, I mean, he's one of the nicest dudes you would want to cover, you know, but he got caught up in this. It was horrible. I don't know. Between that, I think the Sark thing and that thing, I mean, because you like the Lane Kiffin tarmac and stuff, like that's fun. Like that's something you can talk about for years on end. But really going through the Sark stuff and being at practice on like, it was like a Saturday morning, and looking around and you're like, where's the head coach? Like the head coach wasn't at practice, you know? And like getting texts from boosters and stuff like, dude, something's going down. And it was pretty crazy, you know, like the Josh Shaw stuff was pretty crazy, but this involved like the head coach of the football team. So, Boone, that would probably be mine. What's yours, Dave?
I think I got to go Diddy Kettlebell. Right?
Oh yeah. That's pretty, pretty, pretty good.
Because that also like dominated things for a while, but then you've also got the China incident with the UCLA basketball players that involved the president.
Yeah.
And they were in Chinese jail for like a week or something.
Wait, so communist jail is...
they weren't in jail. They were like house arrested in a hotel, but it sounded cool. But like it was... That one was wild, and that was like national news for a while, which... You know, outside of the sporting realm, like that was the president tweeting about it.
Yeah. Yeah. When you have CNN are talking about it, like it changes, right? Like it's a whole different thing.
But I think that was the most newsy, but I think the Diddy thing inspired more memes. So I got to go with the Diddy kettlebell incident. swinging a kettlebell at UCLA strength coach Sal Alossi. Who, you know, many probably wanted to swing a kettlebell at various points, and I don't think they fault Diddy for it, but yeah, when you can have like a billionaire media mogul on campus swinging some sort of heavy weight at your strength coach, you know, you've really got a program going.
That video for you guys like was huge, right? Like it was absolutely enormous.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Enormous. I think it won us something. So yeah, that was great. All right, if you could do your same job but for a different school in a different era, what would that school era be?
Ooh, the era thing makes it much more interesting. I still want to live someplace cool, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I could do, like, Seattle and Washington. I think I could do that. I mean, covering, like, Oregon during their era would have been fun.
No, wouldn't have.
You don't think so? Oh, no, because Chip Kelly.
Like watching the team, but like Chip Kelly.
Yeah, that's not very. Like, I think a smaller town, like a Clemson, like recent Clemson would have been a lot of fun. Like cover Dabo, like from the, you know, interim coach gets promoted to, you know, national championships. Like, I think that would have been a fun one. Like Alabama probably wouldn't have been that fun.
Peak Spurrier
might have been a good time. What else would have been kind of fun to cover? Like, you know, maybe some, I don't want to live like in the middle of Pennsylvania, like Penn State wouldn't have been. Even like Urban Meyer, Florida, that would have probably been kind of fun.
Yeah, you could have seen Aaron Hernandez.
Yeah, there would have been a lot of arrests. Any like Texas, Oklahoma ones you would have, anything like that? Like Austin's cool. Like I could live in Austin. So Texas, but when were they? They weren't really good since like the 50s or something. like literally like the last national championship. Yeah, Texas would, I'd want them to be better, but I would live in Austin. Like Austin would be all right.
Yeah, so like the Daryl Royal era at Texas.
Yeah. What about like Miami and the 2000s, you know, early.
Yeah, like 2001. Yeah. 2001 Miami. That would have been cool.
I mean, because then you're in Miami, and and all those guys were getting, who knows, you might have got some of the fringe benefits the players were getting just being in the media. Like, that could have been fun.
That would have been a lot of fun. Yeah, absolutely.
See, Tallahassee, like Florida State, their run in the 90s would have been awesome, but I don't want to live in Tallahassee. Like Nebraska, that would have been fun, but I don't want to live, you know, in Nebraska. It's sort of like you need to have something, like something cool. Columbus is not bad. I haven't spent a lot of time there, but it could be worse. I've not, like, what about Michigan? Like, would you do any, would you do that at all or no?
No, not in a million years.
Yeah, it's just ever. Too, I mean, I guess you're on Lake Michigan. Like Chicago, like what's, there's nothing really, like Illinois went to like a Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, Northwestern.
Nah, I'm going Peak Spurrier. That's what I'm doing.
Okay. I kind of like
96 Spurrier.
Any West Coast. I mean, we could just switch like UCLA. You could do like UCLA with the Cade McNown time. Like that would have been kind of fun.
Yeah. I would have covered the Carroll era. That would have been fun as hell.
What about like anything else? Would you like not Oregon? You wouldn't do. Would you do Washington or?
I don't know if like Don James, I don't know if he was like a ton of fun to cover. Maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, that whole era would have been cool. Like the '80s and the, you know, Washington, was obviously great. UCLA was a lot of fun in the '80s. So covering it then would have been a lot of fun. Just the Pac-10 generally.
What about Bill McCartney when Colorado was winning like the late '80s, early '90s?
Yeah.
They brought in a ton of California talent and you're in like, you're in Boulder, which is pretty cool. That could be fun.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah. All right.
Are you ready for this last one?
Sure.
Bonus, who's going to be on the Iron Throne at the end of Game of Thrones?
Boone, I've never watched an episode, so I have no idea.
Boone, I have watched episodes. I have thoughts, but I'm not going to share them all with you right here. What I will say is I think it's going to be perfectly and completely as expected. I don't think the writers have much imagination. So I'm going to go with Daenerys Targaryen. She will be on the throne. Maybe she will have had to kill Jon. Maybe he will have had to die. Who knows? But I think she will be on the Iron Throne.
So that's the whole point of this is like the Iron Throne is like the pinnacle. Like that's what you want to be. Like,
well, no. So, well, this is now. Okay, fine.
No,
you opened up
crap.
The gates,
never
Ryan.
Mind.
Nope. Yep. You can't pump the brakes now. So they set up since episode one, season one. The whole thing is we gotta stop the army of the dead, and it's become even more important over the last couple of seasons. Like, look, we gotta stop the army of the dead. Nothing else matters. All this BS that you guys have been doing for all these seasons, it doesn't matter. And that's all done. They've got three episodes left, and that's all done. Like, the whole Army of the Dead thing, it's wiped. They got just trucked off the field after, like, one, you know, 80-minute episode. And now it's all, like, all these, like, anticlimactic court politics again. And it's just like, you screwed up the scale, guys. Like, you have to culminate with the Army of the Dead. You can't go Army of the Dead and yet then be like, oh, yeah, who's going to sit on this, like, swordy throne? That's not the way this narrative is going to build. So
is the Army of the Dead like the SEC and then like the rest of the conferences took them down and now they're fighting for power? Like who's going to reign supreme?
Yeah, no, the Army of the Dead was like, it's like one of those teams that gets ranked number one super early on in a season and then they finish with like four losses.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Like, no, they got to like November and they crumpled and it's just like, okay. Well, now it's anticlimactic because we had them as like a world beater, but they're not going to do anything now. Mm. So, yeah, I don't know. It's limping to the finish. But I think it's going to be Daenerys Targaryen.
Okay. I don't know who that is, but go team. This is Rusty. Notes from the underground. Howdy, boys. Near the end of your last podcast, Dave expressed a sentiment that most sensible listeners will agree with. If the content of a podcast does not appeal to you, just turn the damn thing off. Your podcast has a loyal following because it consistently provides intelligent content and analysis by you. Rusty, are you drunk? And because there are a host There are a host of sophisticated listeners who present.
Okay, he's drunk. He's drunk.
Who present?
He listens to us read these questions all the time, and he's like, "These are sophisticated people. I like them. I want to hear more from them."
He says there are a host of sophisticated listeners who present interesting questions. I would agree with that. The Hitler for a day feller is one example. That Hitler for a day feller is one example. Having said this, however, some listeners ask incredibly stupid and fawning questions. Are donuts a breakfast food? I like that question because I like donuts. Your favorite candy bar? I learned that
I
David doesn't like nuts. I told my wife about that. How to tell someone you don't love them anymore? Give me a fucking break. I'm reading this. In an attempt to make the point about how stupid some of your questions are, I sarcastically wrote in a while ago to suggest that you do vocalizations of what it would sound like if certain Pac-12 personalities squealed like a pig. Since you apparently did not grasp my sarcasm or point, I will be more direct. We certainly did not, Rusty.
We 100% did not, because, like, if you're going to aim for, like, ridiculous, you've got to go a few levels beyond that. Like, again, have you listened to the questions we get asked on this show?
Because that was somewhat in the realm of possibility, it wasn't. We took it seriously. So it was like, all right, that makes sense.
One of our promises to you, the listener, is that we will take your just awful question seriously, yeah. And you can probably troll us because we'll think that somebody is in the Washington depth chart that's actually like a Jack Mehoff joke.
Right, exactly. That was a fun one too. These types of questions are only slightly more elevated than Mike Yam's trademark "What is it like?" form of question.
Oh, this is the guy who hates Mike Yam.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
They
okay.
are meaningless and inane drivel. Rusty is not a Mike Yam fan. While Dave is right that I certainly can turn your podcast off, I choose not to do so. Instead, I grit my teeth and suffer through your answers because I know better questions and content will soon follow. I suspect that most of your listeners do the same thing. I know that for ratings and reviews, you have to address those stupid questions in a kind of, politic way.
It's a fancy way of saying politic.
Yeah. Okay. Politic way. But I don't have the same constraints. Accordingly, on behalf of myself and all listeners who share my sentiments about stupid questions, I say this to the inept dork listeners who ask such questions. This is all caps. Shut the fuck up. I am kidding, kinda, but also not kidding, kinda. We cool? Your pal and curmudgeon on the range, Rusty. P.S. Someone suggested a podcast which is devoted to strategy and tactics. And more specifically, to whether it would work to execute a game plan based solely upon statistics. Such a podcast would crank my tractor. On my part, I have an idea about a show that might dive deeply into the regional and
demographic.
Sorry, oh my god, this is just really long.
Words are hard.
Demographic.
There's so many of them.
There's so many back to back. Demographic differences between fans in different parts of the country. I do think a proper understanding of this is essential to address the ailments of the Pac-12. I will write in to flesh out this suggestion soon, but content, better content than donuts. They said that donuts. Then donuts, you bet. Holy crap.
Look, if you're gonna write a long email, Rusty, thank you so much.
Yeah.
If you're gonna write a really long email, please just give it like one quick read over for typos, because by the end of it, neither of us, like, we don't even remember the English language by the end of it. We are just reading the words. And so better content that donuts, you bet, doesn't do anything for us. Just give it one quick read. You'll see that is there. You want to change that to an N. We'll be good. It'll be fine. Thank you for your thoughts, Rusty. I appreciate them. We're probably still going to answer all of the questions. I know. But during the season, it's a lot better. The off season's always kind of a free for all. But I think last week we went long on a couple. Most of the time we're not going to go that long. He said, right, knowing that he's lying.
I think if there was like 25 questions and we were like, okay, let's get rid of a few. But if there's like 10, 12, we'll just probably answer them all, you know, just because it's.
Yeah, like just so you know, we have six more today. So it's, you know, we're just kind of meandering through it. But I mean, there have been shows where we've definitely been staring at 24 and we'll rail through them pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So, all right. This is from our man Hitler for a day, Hitler Day, Almond, Powder Bluegrass. I caught the UCLA spring game at the bar while killing time before a more consequential contest, all the while thinking how pleased David must be with the Bruins' defensive performance. Only a single gentlemanly field goal on a scoreboard otherwise unsullied by garish points. The sterling effort was spoiled a little, however, by how often the offense was sliding around the field like it was an ice rink. The audio was off at the bar, so I didn't hear any explanation for this, but I seem to recall the surface of the Rose Bowl being slippery in a lot of games over the last few years. Do you boys know if there's something about the grass there that's changed, or is it hard to maintain, and why would it be significantly different from Memorial Coliseum? So first, the spring game was not at the Rose Bowl, so maybe similar, but not obviously the same. Maybe they were trying to mimic game conditions. You don't know. Maybe they threw some ice on that sucker. Who knows? I haven't noticed the Rose Bowl being any more slippery than other surfaces, but I mean that could be true. But I haven't really noticed it over much, so I don't really have a thought on it. Obviously, the greens. I don't know if they're greenskeepers, whatever. The people who handle the like landscaping at all these stadiums, they do different stuff. They'll use different strains of grass. I think Chris Cartman had a great thing about the ASU guy last year who does like some really innovative stuff with the grass there. But I don't know to what extent they do anything way different from other schools. The only thing I would note is, and this is something a lot of people say, the Rose Bowl grass is very soft, just very, very soft. But I don't know how that affects slipperiness or anything.
Huh? Yeah. USC had theirs at the track stadium, which is on the field turf. So that could be slippery sometimes when it's not grass, but the Coliseum and Rose Bowl both have grass. And I don't remember one being more slippery than the other. I don't know.
No, I don't. Yeah.
The slipperiest surface I've seen, like in Southern California, like the, as far as stadiums go, I'd go Staples Center. Cause like, when like the Kings play,
especially when they put the ice down. You know what else? That Arrowhead Pond.
Yeah,
that'll get you.
I want to see the Angels out there playing on that surface. Like,
Hifflede, not one of your best. I'm gonna say it, not one of your best questions. Asking the two gentlemen here about grass. About surfaces, just whew, we're not your market.
No, good. That's all right. Hitler for a day.
It's fine. It's fine. Yeah. It's fine. Hitler for a day.
NFL draft. This one's from Frank in Sacramento. Only three Pac-12 players go in the bottom of the first round of the NFL draft. That has to be the worst showing in 20 years. The Pac-12 is a real hole, Frank in Sacramento. Well, we went over the stats. It wasn't the worst in 20 years, but it's been what I said, since 2004 or something. It's been a while. What did I say?
He said something.
2007. So first time since 2007 that no players were picked in the top 10. So it's been 12 years since something like that happened. But, you know, we went over some of the stats. It's not all bad. Like, we're not going to just bash the Pac-12 for the sake of bashing, but it, you know.
Sure we will.
It wasn't.
That's the theme of the show.
It wasn't the greatest draft, but it wasn't terrible. You know, it's like, it just
could have been worse. Nobody could have been drafted.
Yeah, like you don't have like, you know, last year having like a Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen go in the top 10, like that makes a big deal. You know, they didn't really have anything like that this time. The top quarterbacks in the conference, you know, didn't end up getting, they weren't the measurable guys that people want to draft. Not that they can't be successful, but they weren't going to be the, you know, the big arm or whatever super athlete guys. Next year, maybe it'll change.
Maybe.
Yeah, you got Herbert. Herbert might be a big pick. You know, who knows?
Who knows? All right, you ready?
Oh, we got a text.
What's up, fellas? I just finished catching. This is Hack? I think it's Hack.
Yeah.
What's up, fellas? I just finished up catching up on the podcast, which was about 10-plus hours of YouTube over the span of 3 days.
I'm so sorry.
That's a lot. I can't do that. All right, two quick takeaways. Larry Scott sucks, and Woods is one angry bearded bastard. Hearing him talking about Disney princesses and then going off on random shit like Sonic Burger, Nuts and Chocolate, Space Jam, or Bernie is an absolute delight and a scary representation of mankind all at the same time. I don't know how to take that. Compliment? Yeah, compliment.
Yeah, it's a compliment.
Now for my hypothetical. If the Pac-12 were to get Oklahoma, Texas, and four other great programs, but had to keep the conference at 12 schools, which schools in the current Pac-12 would have to go for the success of the conference as a whole? One caveat is you can only keep one school from each region. So, for example, you have to choose between UCLA or USC, Utah or Colorado, and et cetera. Thanks for the podcast, you too, and thanks for bringing a little sanity to it, Ryan.
Wow. Okay, so you have to bring in, you want to bring in Oklahoma, Texas, and four other programs. You have to, you're bringing in six. You have to drop six.
Okay, so you have to drop six current Pac-12 schools, and you can only pick one of each set.
Wow.
Okay. All right. I mean, this is actually, like, it's extremely easy, right?
I would say so. So you got to drop Oregon, right? No.
All right. So a couple of them will be difficult. All right. Oregon State, sorry, you're out.
Yeah.
Colorado, sorry, you're out.
Yeah.
Cal, sorry, you're out.
Yeah.
Okay. Washington State.
It's Washington State, you're out.
Washington State, you're out. Arizona State. This is the one that's like most difficult, but you're dropping Arizona.
I think you're dropping Arizona. Even with the basketball prestige, I think you have to keep Arizona State.
I think so too. And then it's UCLA, USC. I mean, look, obviously, you're dropping USC.
Yeah, obviously. either way, you're losing over 100 national championships. Like,
that's true. It's true. All right, so you're probably taking USC there. So it's the league would be USC, ASU, Utah, Stanford, Oregon, and Washington, Oklahoma, Texas, and four other great programs.
What's the case for Arizona?
The case for Arizona is the impact in basketball. I just don't think basketball, it's not a minor sport by any stretch, but it is like significantly less important than football.
Yeah.
And ASU is just a better, more committed football program and has been for a while. So
baseball wise, both have good traditions, but ASU's is better.
Once you get past basketball, it just nosedives. Like, it just doesn't matter.
Okay. All right, I want to be fair. I want to be fair to Arizona. I want to make sure it's not like.
I don't think it's like a hard and fast thing. I think those are probably the two among all of those schools that are the closest, in terms of the case you could make. The other ones are easier calls. But Arizona State, I think that's the closest pairing, and even then, I think it's ASU.
All right. Let's see. We got. Interesting.
You're getting the long ones today.
That's all right. The future of the Pac-12. This is from old Michael, as opposed to if we have newer Michaels or younger Michaels. I would thank you for all your hard work putting on the podcast. But since you tell us every week that you don't put any hard work into it, I guess I can't. Well, thanks for that. I was struck that the Big Ten was paying out more than the SEC, even though the SEC has all the championships and rabid fans. I figured it had to be about TV markets. I compared the Pac-12 and the Big Ten. The Pac-12 is in 15 of the top 100 media markets. The Big Ten is in 29. That's almost twice as many. Throw in the fact that the Big Ten fans are generally more dedicated and the media rights connect to a lot more viewers. If you are an advertiser, who would you pay more for? A network with a larger media footprint and more dedicated viewers, or B, a network with a smaller footprint and fewer viewers. Clearly, a bad media strategy plays a big role in the financial woes of the Pac-12 that can, in theory, be fixed. But we also have structural problems based on geography, population distribution, and culture, fan apathy. The only remedy for that would be expansion, but it's hard to find a good way forward unless we can figure out a way to get Texas on board. It's hard to see a path forward that gives us financial parity and the big with the big Eastern leagues. That doesn't mean we shouldn't try to fix the media strategy, but that doesn't seem like the total answer. What do you guys think? Keep up the lack of hard work. Old Michael, the lack of hard work. He says, by the way, I spend an extra $20 to get the Pac-12 networks during the football and basketball season, and then I turn it off as soon as the Pac-12 basketball tournament is over. There is zero programming worth watching during the off season. That's old
cool.
Michael.
Okay, so that's $20 a month. So as an a la carte option, I think that would be, If you get, you know, I don't know, a million people to pay $20 a month for football and basketball season, I don't know if it'd be a million, but whatever. That'd be great. What do I think about the media rights stuff? Yeah, I completely agree. And I think we've been pretty clear on that, that there's some systemic issues and some structural issues with the Pac-12 that just make it, you're always going to be a little bit behind the other leagues just from those basic things. The thing is, you don't want to also shoot yourself in the foot while you're doing that.
Yeah.
It's one thing 100%. To be at like, it's one thing to be at like, I don't know, 75 or 80% of the level of the other leagues. And it's a completely different one to be at like whatever they are, 10%, 20%, whatever it is. They need to correct their own strategy issues. They need to be a little bit more innovative, but no, they're not. There's probably never going to be pure financial parity, and I don't think there needs to be. Like, it doesn't need to be the same dollars and cents for it to all work out in the end. It just needs to be close-ish. And right now they're rapidly becoming not close at all.
Yeah. And there's things you can't control. Like, you're talking about those media markets and things like that. But there's a lot of things you can control. Expenses are one of them. Your strategy is one of them. The choices you've made to, you know, solely own the complete 100% of the Pac-12 networks, as opposed to partnering up with someone that does this better because they do this all the time, like an ESPN or a Fox, was a very poor decision. And paying your members, your people that do a worse job way more than what the other people make is just ridiculous.
The truth is, we all know Champagne Larry likes to roll large, right?
Like, do you have to pay Champagne Larry more than whatever the SEC guy makes or whatever the Big Ten guy makes? Like, why? Like, he's fifth as far as rank the jobs and the Power Five. He's fifth, but he gets paid the most. That stuff you can control. That doesn't matter what markets you're in, all that. There's stuff that you can control that the Pac-12 has just done a terrible job at.
Yep, completely agree. All right, final one. You ready?
Yeah.
All right, this is from Anthony. Podcast question. Hi, Ryan and Dave. Who would you rather have, Jim Harbaugh or Chris Peterson?
I'm going to go Chris Peterson because you're going to get longevity. Chris Peterson has been like, you know, wore out his welcome in 3 or 4 years, like Jim Harbaugh has at some places. So I'm going to go with Chris Peterson. He's had more success, in college than Jim Harbaugh. Now, Jim Harbaugh did amazing things at Stanford, but I'd put Peterson's resume up against that. Now, Harbaugh did go to a Super Bowl, as an NFL quarterback, but I would still take Peterson. What do you think?
Yeah, I would take Peterson. There's less of a chance that in the future, like, just, you know, judging them from my angle, there's less of a chance in the future that Chris Peterson goes to prison for being a serial killer. but, you know, Jim Harbaugh, you know, I think there's a non-zero chance that, you know, he's got, you know, some things in his floorboards, okay? And so I think if I'm assessing the two, there's less risk involved with Chris Peterson.
Gotcha.
Also, he's a better coach, I think. A better fit for the college game, I think, in the long term. He's already shown it with a long period at Boise State. I think he likes the college game. I don't think he's any risk to leave for the NFL. So, yeah, that all makes sense to me. And Harbaugh's just a little too unhinged for me.
If you're talking about the program being like a Stanford or Michigan, I think I'd rather have Harbaugh. I think he fits better in places like that, or a lot of the Big Ten schools. I think maybe Harbaugh would fit better, but like West Coast schools or more of the modern ones, I would put Peterson there.
I think Peterson would murder any job in college.
You think so? Wouldn't, okay.
Yeah. I think he'd be crushing at Michigan right now too.
All right.
And I like Harbaugh. I actually think he's doing a really good job at Michigan, and you know, they were very close this year, in some ways, and I think there's a chance that they, now that Ohio State's kind of having to, you know, change things up a little bit, maybe there's a chance that Harbaugh, you know, kind of dominates that league, but we'll see. But I think he's a good coach. I think Peterson's probably a cut above at this point.
All right,
and then the last one, what chore do you absolutely hate doing? Huh. So Bernie's loving this right now.
Bernie.
As is Rusty.
Rusty loves it.
What chore do you absolutely hate doing, Ryan?
You know, it's like, I mean, I don't like doing chores, but I don't think I hate any. Like, sometimes I like doing the dishes, just whatever. I started hiring a cleaning lady years ago to, like, so I don't have to, like, wash the floors and stuff all the time. But, like, in my office, like, I'll wash the floors in the bath. Like, I have a bathroom in here. I'll do that myself. And it doesn't really bother me. I don't know. I don't know if I, like, hate it. Folding laundry kind of sucks, but I don't mind doing it. I don't know. I don't know if I really hate a chore. Maybe you say something that'll jar my thought process. But is there one you hate or anything? Or
I used to hate chores a lot more. I think prior to having kids, I despised chores and avoided them and just stacked dishes like a slob. I think now it's like a good opportunity to, like, do something where you can kind of just zone out for a second. So I like to use it for that. I do all the dishes. I do quite a bit of laundry, just to kind of have something to zone out doing. And then the one that I hate is scrubbing a bathtub.
Yeah, that's
that
no
is
fun.
my most despised activity in the chore realm is scrubbing a bathtub.
Yeah, I don't have to do this anymore. But as a kid, I didn't like mowing the lawn. Like, that was never fun. So I don't know. But yeah, it's cleaning the bathroom and stuff isn't really that would probably be the one I put in there. But
scrubbing work just kind of sucks in general.
Yeah,
something like a tub too, because it's just got. You know, if you've got a tub that's been hanging around for a little while, it's just got, like, discolored spots where it's like, I could scrub that for a million years and it's not gonna, like, there's, it's just, that's just the way it's colored now.
Yeah.
So it's just, whatever. Chores suck. Anthony, this sucked.
Yeah.
Why'd you ask us about chores?
Yeah, chores aren't fun, but it's hard for me to pick, like, one, like, oh, I really just hate, like, dishes or whatever. Like, you have kids, so, like, that's something that you take your mind away. I know, I'm like better at that than my wife. Like, I'd rather me wash the dishes than my wife for whatever reason.
So you turn it into like a competition thing. You're like, look, the only way this is getting done well is if I do it.
Exactly.
So it gives you like a sense of pride and superiority when you're doing it as well. Like, you're like, I'm washing these dishes better than anyone in this goddamn house can do.
That's funny. And my wife will probably do laundry more than me, but she'll do it like, I don't know, hopefully she's not listening. It's sort of like,
in a way that you do not prefer.
Well, she'll start it, and then I'll go down there, and there'll be, like, it's in our garage, and then it'll be like a basket with clothes in it. I don't know if they're clean or dirty or what. Like, if I'm doing it, I go wash, dry, put something in the wash. I'm like, systematic, take it out, fold it. Like, when I do, like, three loads of laundry, it's all done. She'll do, like, halfway, and then she's kind of in the middle, and then it's sort of, like, impedes me from doing laundry because I'm not sure where she's at. You know what I mean? So, like,
I am picking up what you're putting down 100%. And the thing is, like, I'll like set timers and stuff. Like, I'll start the dryer, and because it's like not in the same location where I'm like hanging out, I'll set a timer,
really?
And then go check on it because I want that stuff folded as soon as possible after it's done.
Yes, because like, it'll get wrinkly otherwise.
Yeah, I don't want to mess around with that.
Yeah, my wife will leave it in there for days. So,
yeah. No, and just like, and turn it on to fluff them out every now and then just to make sure they're, you know, lose the wrinkles.
I will do that. I'll do the, like, if I see it's been there for a few days, I think there's some in there right now. Yeah, I'll give it a fluff. And, but that's funny.
But then it gets that, like, almost like a strange dryer odor, too. Like, it's like, this doesn't smell like it did coming out of the wash.
No.
It smells strange now.
And if you leave it in the washing machine too long afterwards, then you got to rewash it because it's going to...
Well, then it gets its own different
kind of
weird smell. It
gets a stank on it or whatever. And you're like, it's like, it smells like spoiled. So, you know what I mean?
Spoiled clothes. Yeah, I do. Unfortunately, I do.
Well, I mean, you guys got the kids. And it's funny, like, it's changed. I've been working out more. Like, so every morning, basically, I'm going to the gym and my clothes are just sweaty. Like, you know, they're soaking wet and then they just sit in the hamper. So I have to like wash them more often now. So I'm doing more laundry than I've done ever because of the workouts more. But
I have a shirt that I've been wearing. So I've been going to the gym at like 5 a.m. and I have a shirt that I've worn to every single one because we do laundry daily here. It smells so bad in my closet that I can't put it in my closet anymore because I noticed the shirts it was hanging next to in my closet would start to reek of my body odor because my body odor is like so caustic and like acidic that it was just like, it was like getting into my dress shirts. Like I was going to work one day and I'm like, what is this smell? And it was the body odor from my clean workout shirt.
So you wear the same shirt, but you wash it every day.
I wash it every day.
But it still smells.
But it stinks. Like it's so bad.
You
so bad.
You could get another shirt.
No. Why mess up a good thing at this point?
I have to do that. Like I wear like these workout gloves, like when I ride the bike and stuff, or do like the, you know, lift. Yeah. And so like those, you know, after a couple times, you have to throw them in the wash too. So it's like, you just have to constantly wash stuff. It's crazy. How did we get on this? Anthony, this is your fault.
Yeah. I don't know where we ended up. We talked about laundry for a while.
Well, because of the chores. Wow. Like you hate
doing
chores.
Yeah. No,
which I don't know. Yeah. Let us know if you hate a chore, like really, really, like there's one you don't like. But I feel like it's hard because a lot of the yard work, like now you people just pay people to do that. And if you get a cleaning lady, like the scrubbing work, like you clean up and you might dust some things or vacuum a little bit. But like the hardcore cleaning, if you have a cleaning lady come in, that's what you have them do. So you don't have to do that as much anymore. A lot of people, I guess, but or some people or me. I don't know.
Yeah, you're just speaking from a place of privilege right now, Ryan.
I'm just super, super privileged. But even like,
see,
the
only reason I had children was to have people who would eventually clean.
Right. Get the little cleaners.
So I don't have to anymore. Yeah, it's like the modern day version of having children to work the farm. I have children to like clean up dishes and stuff.
Nice. Well, like growing up, like I would go mow like a neighbor's yard for some money. You know, like that's a way you would do it. But like now, I don't think the kids even do that anymore. Like kids don't mow their own lawn. Like people just have gardeners and stuff come, right? Like, I don't know. Does it happen?
I don't know. I don't think they just have gardeners come. I think what it is probably kids, like there's less of that kind of neighborly thing going on.
Oh.
So you're probably not mowing anybody's lawn besides your own, maybe. But no, I don't think I maybe the prevalence of like gardener people is more than it ever was, but I don't know.
It, you know, that's probably just like a, so
I'm going to have to see some stats, Ryan. I'm going to have to see some numbers to prove that statement.
Maybe it's an LA thing or something, but even like I used to have a paper route when I was a kid, like now it's just like people driving around in a van delivering papers and stuff. Like, I don't know, are their paper boys still exist?
Well, newspapers barely exist.
That's
anymore.
True. But I think a lot of this is probably Los Angeles things where, you know, you don't have a lot of room to even, you know, to have a mower, even if you have a yard. Like, we don't really have, you know, we have.
Well, there also aren't jobs for, like, paperboys. What was that, when you were, like, 13 or 14?
Yeah, like, pre.
No 13-year-old, like, is working some, like, part-timey, just enough to, like, make 10 bucks a week job anymore. Like, that's,
yeah,
not,
that's probably true.
That doesn't exist anymore. I mean, any 13-year-old working is doing some really crappy, awful stuff. So it's a different world.
Yeah.
You know, there was more availability of those sorts of, like non-job, like giggy, you know, things that were seasonal or whatever that just don't exist anymore.
That was like, I thought it helped me though. Like I learned, cause you had to collect. So once a week you would collect from each house and whatever it was, say the subscription was like $2.50 a week for the local paper. Then they would like sometimes to give you like $3 or $2.75. So you get a little bit of a tip, but you have to like figure it out. And then I would have to pay out the newspaper company. So like I had to kind of, you know, so if someone didn't pay me, I had to make sure I got collected from them the next week or whatever it was. And so you kind of had to figure it out. There was like a logbook and you know, you needed, there was math involved to make sure that you were like what you were getting paid. And, you know, some of the places would tip you, some places wouldn't. One lady used to leave like a Snickers bar, which you would have hated, but I loved. Maybe that's why I love Snickers bars. That was like, that's what I look forward to. Like, it was toward the end of my route. I would go get that Snickers bar at the end on collection day. So I think you learned a lot, you know, as a 12 or 13 year old, like, you know, dealing with some budgets and stuff. I thought it helped me.
Yeah. I think also with, a lot of the, so, like, a lot of the people who get jobs like that, like paperboys and stuff, like, I think the focus on academics and getting to college is now much, much more insane than it's ever been. And so, like, the encouragement that you would get from your parents to go get a job when you're, like, that age, I don't think it's there anymore.
Oh,
like, yeah. I think most are probably pushing their kids to study more and focus more on academics because it's such a crunch. I don't know.
Did you do anything like that? Like, were you like before high school or high school, did you work or anything or?
Yeah, I had a I worked at the local rec park in high school.
Oh, okay.
Doing like, you know, just like camp counselor and all that kind of crap in up in later high school, but I didn't, I think my first job was when I was like 17, 16, okay. 17, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I ended up working at a grocery store, I think when I was 15, like, and I just remember getting like the paycheck and then looking, you know, like thinking that I was working harder than like the manager was, like bagging groceries. You know, I was like, why? That guy's just standing around. Like, I'm working hard. And then when you see like the taxes come out, I was just like pulling my hair out. Like, what the heck is this? Like this, you know.
Yeah, I had the same experience when I worked at a grocery store. It was awful. Because you also hit it at a better time. Like, I hit it like post a strike in California.
Oh.
And so every entry level like bagger or whatever was down to minimum wage. It sucked.
Oh man.
And that is brutal work. Like being a bag boy, because you got to do like the cart duty too. Out.
Oh yeah, getting the carts, that sucked. I think I only did bagging for like 2 months, and then I went to one of the I went to produce. So every department was sort of like a fraternity. You know, like the produce, there was frozen food and dairy, there was grocery, the deli. Like those were always the weird people, the deli. But there, you know, there was like, yeah, we had produce fights in the back and stuff. But it was cool. Like when you went to the department, it was better in the grocery store world. But oh, yeah. than being the bagger, but
absolutely
nice. All right, well, we got a lot of tangents. Now you know where we worked as children, what we did. All right, well, anything else, Dave? We good?
I am so good. It's been wonderful. We laughed. We cried. We had a good time.
We did have a great time. That is David Woods. Does an amazing job over there on Bro. Make sure you go check it out. I'm Ryan Abraham. USCfootball.com. Thanks so much for tuning in to the podcast of Champions, and we will talk to you next time.